The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
Here's the idea for the next 10 pods. We can do Paddy's little holiday review. 40 minutes of review.
Like Catherine Thomas here, no frontiers.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
Right, it's 12 minutes past 8. If you want to get in touch with us this morning, you can. 087 9180 180 is the WhatsApp number. You can leave a comment in the YouTube stream. You can tweet us at OffTheBallAM. Daniel Harris is standing by. We're talking football next.
OTB. AM.
13 minutes past 8 this morning here on OTB AM. You can keep your comments coming in about the performance rankings or indeed about anything else that's going on in the world of football. Now, delighted to say Daniel Harris is with us this morning. Daniel, good morning to you. How are you?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Before we get into the performance at Manchester United at the weekend, let's talk about the game yesterday and the quality of football, particularly in the second half between Liverpool and Manchester City. The Premier League is pretty good at the moment.
Yeah, it is. I think I said this before, but there's never been four teams as good as the best four teams now. I don't think that the team that wins the league will be as good as the best teams that we've seen, because good though this City are, I don't think they're as good as the Guardiola team that won two in a row. And as good as Liverpool are, I don't think they're as good as this team was even the season before they won the league, the year they won the Champions League. I don't think Chelsea are as good as Mourinho's great teams, but we've never had four teams of this quality with this quality of player. And it's not so relevant to that City-Liverpool game yesterday. It's more relevant to some of the other games we saw, the Chelsea game at the weekend, the United game at the weekend. But the teams below that top four, there's never been anything like the depth of quality in those teams that there is now.
In a weird way, the depth of quality actually maybe makes the counter-argument for you that those great teams, that Mourinho side, for example, they were slashing mediocre sides. There was always a Bradford or one of those teams who they could beat 6-0 twice. And that might have puffed up how good we thought they were. If you are the team that comes out of this league this season, there's a case, given the quality of the opposition, that maybe you might end up winning one of the best leagues that we have ever seen.
Definitely, the standard across the league is very strong. If you're asking me if I think that are Chelsea's forwards now as good as Robin, Drogba and Duff? So I think any of their midfield players are as good as Lampard. So I think that they've got three defenders as good as Ashley Cole, John Terry and Ricardo Carvalho. That's a no. And it's not because I watched these guys play against less good opposition, though maybe we did, or at least less good opposition through the course of the season. But it doesn't matter. I mean, what we saw yesterday between Liverpool and City, we saw a great game of two teams properly going for it. And it's not that often you see that. And it was really interesting to see the way that City dominated the first half and Liverpool were able to adjust, because in order to do that, that's not just a matter of tactical nous or technical ability, but of significant mental strength to get out of that half at 0-0 and then to come back in the way that they did. Also evidence that mentality monsters line that Jurgen Klopp likes to use to describe them.
Roy Keane put it down to energy yesterday. That was the difference in the two halves between Liverpool. Is there anything else that you saw that could educate us a little bit more on what changed for Liverpool?
Jurgen Klopp gave a really good interview about this that Sky put out. It's on Twitter. I actually watched it this morning, where what he said was that City always try and pass the ball, and his team, they allowed City to pass the ball, but just by sitting slightly too deep. And when you see that the other team has that much of the ball, it has a significant mental effect on you, because you start to feel like your game plan's not working, like you're not as good as the other team. And in the second half, Graham Souness always says, and people often dismiss Graham Souness as just like that proper football man cliche, and in a lot of ways he is. But a lot of what he says is true. And he always talks about getting to the ball first. And it just sounds so simple. The team that gets to the ball first wins the game. And I think in the first half, City got to the ball first because, I mean, who knows why? They were quicker, they were more confident, whatever it was. But then Liverpool, they moved their midfielders up the pitch, they moved their back four up the pitch, and they got to the ball first. And once you get to the ball first, you're then in a position to impose your talent, your technical ability, your game plan upon the other team. And in the end, it's funny with Liverpool, because they are kind of feted with good reason as this machine that works in a very particular way. But the goals that they scored came from two pieces of individual brilliance, which when you're evaluating certain other managers, somehow is meant to be cheating.
We'll get on to all that in a minute, don't worry. So let's talk about City first, because Owen made the point a little bit earlier on that if they don't go on and win the league this year, that the recruitment and the decision not to sign an out-and-out striker in the summer, and maybe they fix it in the January transfer window, is something that Pep Guardiola will be castigated for, and rightly so, because it looks like almost everything else in the team is perfect, but they're still missing an out-and-out number nine. Or are they? Has Pep just decided that football is different?
It's fun. I mean, I wouldn't say everything else in the team is perfect. I still think that there's fun to be had with that city defence. And they still haven't replaced Fernandinho, although Rodri is really starting to grow into that role. But I had to write a talking point about this game yesterday, and that was the point that I made. Like, why on earth did they sign Jack Grealish? Because by signing Jack Grealish, they put him in the team, and basically they've marginalised Riyad Mahrez and Raheem Sterling, although Sterling was sort of on his way to marginalisation at the end of last season. And whether or not Grealish is better than those two, at best, that is a pun. Those two are more prolific, more proven goal scorers, more proven at the top level than Grealish. So to say that Grealish is better than either of those two is, I think, at best a pun. And if you're going to assume now that he's fit, that Phil Foden's going to play in all the big games because he's brilliant, then it's one of those three most of the time. And I felt like though Sterling and Mahrez both adequate for what City require, and the hole in their squad is centre-forward. And in the first half, if they'd had Harry Kane or an alternative, felt like they would have scored enough goals to win, just as felt like they'd have beaten Paris in midweek with a centre-forward as well. So I read this talking point. I had started writing it half-time, and I read this talking point about the fact that City needed the centre-forward, and then as the second half unfolded, it started to feel a bit carping, given the quality of the football that produced, and I'm picking out just one particular point where maybe I should just be saying something like, what a game, what a game. But here we are. And yeah, I totally agree that I don't think that Jack Grealish was what City needed. I mean, Guardiola obviously has a peculiar fascination with attacking midfield players, and he's the kind of the game's staunchest aesthete. And Jack Grealish is absolutely that too. So you can see why he signed him. It reminds me a little bit of when United signed Berbatov, in that what they actually probably needed at the time was a midfield player, but just they felt like they could get this beautiful player who would somehow elevate the team. If he not with numbers, because the numbers that the team had already were pretty much on point, but somehow would provide those little bits of magic that on the rare occasion it doesn't work, you've got this one guy who produces the magic. But the reality is that you've got also got this one guy who slows things down a little bit, who wants quite a lot of touches on the ball. And I don't know if it's because they both of them are used to playing in teams who don't have the technical ability to move the ball that quickly, where the onus is basically on them to produce something. So the other players go out and get them the ball. Like when it was Letizia at Southampton, the whole team was basically geared to getting Letizia on under Alan Ball anyway. The whole team was geared to basically getting Letizia on the ball where they needed him to be on the ball. And I think that was a lot of the way that Dean Smith's Villa played and a lot of the way that Spurs played when Berbatov was there. How do we get this guy on time on the ball? But with City, it's not about that. City are facing defences usually who are defending quite deep, who have got numbers back. And it's not really about one player creating those avenues of space. It's about moving the ball quick enough to pull the other team apart to create overloads. And that is much more dynamic than the way that Jack Grealish likes to play. Jack Grealish is more of an old-fashioned schemer who's looking to create angles and make touches and just find that killer ball or that killer shot. And City aren't really about that. Pep Guardiola, the way he likes to play.
But Pep knows this too, right?
I mean, you would think so if I know it. If there's something about football that I know, there's a fairly good chance would say that Pep Guardiola knows it too.
Is he trying to do something different? Is it actually that that he believes there is something, the next iteration, some way of doing something that causes everybody to go, I don't know what this is.
yeah, but I love it. I mean, maybe. Because I think the thing I always think about with City that reminds me a lot of one of the teams to whom they're most similar is Wenger's Arsenal. And it's City are not about scoring about brilliant finishes so much. It's scoring brilliant goals that finish with tap-ins. And Jack Grealish isn't that guy. Yeah, and of course Pep Guardiola knows it. But I guess what he thinks Grealish can bring him is something different. And he can. The question is whether that something different is something that Grealish is capable of producing often enough. And more than that, it's whether something that City need often enough. Whereas the thing that's missing from City over the last couple of years is Sergio Aguero.
Yeah.
And they brought Jesus to replace him even before he was finished, thinking that, I mean, Guardiola, I think, thought that Jesus would give him things that he thought Aguero couldn't, like pressing from the front, like a lot of running. Like, and then it turned out that Jesus probably wasn't as good as Guardiola thought he was, and Aguero was miles better than he thought he was and capable of adapting. But the last couple of seasons, they've not really had Aguero. And so last season, they went with this false nine a lot of the time, no centre forward. But to me, watching, it still looked like this team would be better with a centre forward. And they've found a way of getting around it, which is brilliant. But it didn't feel like the best way of getting around it. The best way of getting around it felt sometimes the most simple solution to the problem is the obvious solution to the problem. But the thing is Guardiola knew this. Like, we're talking, like, he didn't know he needed a centre forward. He did. He tried to buy Harry Kane.
Yeah.
The bit that feels inexplicable is that he didn't toss all his change from the back of the couch and from wherever else he gets his money at Harry Kane, and then deal with that and then worry about Grealish subsequent to that, rather than getting Grealish first, thinking that you're going to get Harry Kane. And when you know that getting any player out of Tottenham is a massive pain in the arse, and it felt like you have to deal with the pressing problem first and then sort the other thing out after that. And that wasn't what they did. And so, I mean, they're still a good team. They still might win the league. They still might win everything because they've got so many good players. They're so settled. They've got, I mean, there are the two best managers in the world, Klopp and Guardiola. I mean, those are the two best. And they've got one of them. So all the things are there for City to win the league. But yeah, it does still feel like if they sign Harry Kane, it wouldn't be a contest. And it looks now like it's going to be a contest. But maybe it won't be.
Do they do a Van Dijk to Liverpool sort of job, get pushed back in the summertime and then go back again in January and go for Harry Kane in a couple of months?
But it felt like they knew what the price for Harry Kane was. The price for Harry Kane was, what, £150 million? They knew that that would get Harry Kane. It wasn't that they couldn't necessarily afford him, because it felt like the money that they spent on Grealish and one sale would have been enough to get Harry Kane. So it felt like, I mean, who knows? And you never really know about the internal financial workings, but it felt like Harry Kane wasn't out of reach. They just couldn't afford the money after they bought Grealish.
Can we move on to Manchester United and the ongoing eternal referendum on Solskjaer? game by game by game by game. We're back into that kind of cycle where it's like, is this going to be the game or the defeat or the goal that tips everybody over the edge where he has to go? And it's like, it seems unfair because it feels like the club are going to give him till the end of the season, almost irrespective, unless they crash out of the Champions League. And now it looks like that ain't going to happen. But it feels like they're going to give him till the end of the season. Maybe I'm wrong about that.
No, I think you're right. I agree. I mean, they tend, like, I felt like they gave Mourinho much longer. Everyone knew Mourinho was over well before Mourinho was over. Everyone knew Moyes was over, and everyone knew Van Gaal was over well before they were over. But for contractual reasons, and perhaps because I ultimately don't really want to change the manager for financial reasons, you've got to pay to sack the manager. You've then got to pay to get a new manager who may well turn up and not like the players that he's been left. It feels like that is something that's changed under Ole, in that any manager in world football would want these players, and also that they've sort of realised that the manager of United needs to want to play in a particular way. You can't jump between styles. And, you know, they'd probably say it was because of, like, philosophy and all this kind of nonsense, but just financially it doesn't make any sense if you get different managers all the time. So I think they've decided that they're going to get managers who in theory want to play dominant, aggressive, exciting football. We don't see as much of that under Solskjaer as we should, given the players that he's got, because the team's not that balanced. And I think ultimately it felt like against Everton, I didn't think that United were as bad as they had been some of the other games this season. This one looks a little bit better, and it still wasn't anywhere near good enough. And you mentioned the word cycle just before. It is beginning to feel like a cycle, that Ole is not going to be quite good enough to prevent United from having games like these, too many games like these. And it feels like the only solution that there is that he gets better players. So if we get another transfer window or another summer, and he gets to buy the midfield player or the two midfield players that he needs, or he gets to buy Trippier, then United would be better. But at this point, right now, at this moment in time, as Gary Neville is so fond of saying, in case we thought it was a moment in something else, at this moment in time, United should be better than they are. And the way that they're playing in these last few games, it's looked a little bit clueless. And you watch the interviews with Ole, and he doesn't give much away. You'd never hear, you tend not to hear an interview like the one that Klopp gave yesterday that I mentioned before, where he gives you like a proper tactical analysis of how things went. Like, maybe he's thinking more than he's letting on, but the interviews are beginning to suggest he's not quite sure what the answer is. And I think it's actually germane to the point I made before about the standard of the league. The standard of the league is such now that you can wear a home defeat against Everton and a away defeat against Southampton because those teams are going to take points elsewhere. I mean, Chelsea basically needed a brain freeze from James Ward-Prowse and a red card to Southampton to get their win. You see it across Europe as well, actually. Bayern Munich getting beat, PSG getting beat, but that's focusing on the Premier League. Southampton got a point against City as well because all those teams have players who can hurt you. If you're not bang at it, then you've got a problem. So what that means for United is that they are still in the title race at this point. And if they manage to find their form, then they are still involved. The question is whether they're going to be able to do that. And I think that the quality of the other teams, weirdly, is actually going to help United, because if it's going to take 95 points to win the league, I don't think United could get that. I don't think they're good enough to get that. But if it's somewhere around 85 points, then they are possibly able to get that. And if it is around 85 points, the reason is going to be the quality of teams like Tottenham, like Brentford, who are good enough to take points off those big teams. Now, the other side of that is that in order to beat those teams with good players, you have to turn up in all the games. And when you're not going to turn up and play well every week, and this is in United's problem, is that when they turn up and don't play well, they're not settled enough into a manner of playing that extracts the most from their goal scorers. That means that you take care of those teams, and that's what we saw against Everton. It's what we saw against Villarreal. Even though United won, they managed to take care of it at the end, but the performance was nowhere near good enough. And we're seeing this week after week now. So I think that the international break, although it's not something that you would often want after a bad result, and I'm sure the players just want to get back going again, it's given Ole an opportunity to actually pause and think, this is not acceptable. What do I need to do to make it better, and come up with a plan? Now, the plan might not work, but one really extremely simple aspect of the plan should be just keep picking the same players. Because over the past few seasons, one of the reasons United haven't been as good as City and Liverpool is City and Liverpool have better players and a better manager. But another very significant reason behind that is those players have been playing together for a lot longer. They know where they're going to be. They know where they're at particular times. Now, with United, because they've not played together as long, last season they were starting to get those automatisms where they're able to attack quickly enough that the other team don't know what's coming. It's bing, bang, 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 and it's a goal. And there's nothing you can do about that. United are starting to get to that point. But this season, like this summer, they signed Sancho, they signed Ronaldo, Rashford's injured. And so they're kind of having to learn those things all over again because they're playing with totally different players. Now, the only way that's going to bed in, or the quickest way of bedding it in, is to keep playing players in their positions, in the same positions, with the same other players, which is a massive pain in the ass for the players that aren't selected.
Well,
but you can use them off the bench.
On that point, though,
yeah,
isn't the issue that we're not seeing an improvement quickly enough from McTominay and Fred, who are starting every game, essentially? It seems like Solskjaer has definitely decided these two are going to start all the big games now on the regular. And
but they haven't. They didn't start against Villarreal. Against Villarreal, it was Pogba, Bruno and McTominay. And then it was five more changes. And I think you're right, in principle, that it is beginning to look a lot like the best midfield that United can put together is Bruno, Fred and McTominay. Because it's looking like there will be some games that you can get away with Bruno and Pogba. I guess part of me would like to see McTominay, Van de Beek and Bruno, just because I've not seen it yet. But nothing I've seen of Van de Beek playing for United makes me think that this guy's the answer. But it does look like it's got Bruno, Fred, McTominay is the one that gives you the most defensive protection without hindering the attacking play enough. But then if that's the case, then play it in most of the games. And if you're going to make a change, change one or two players, change one midfield player. If you want to bring in Pogba, then do it. If you want to change an attacker, bring in one attacker. But he made five changes from Villarreal, and Everton are a good side. And I know they were without players, but Everton are still a good side. So you can't expect to just get away with five changes. If you look at the Alex Ferguson teams, he sometimes did that, but he was Alex Ferguson and he was a genius. He was able to do that. Pep Guardiola did it last season when everyone was tired during Corona, towards sort of Christmas time, because he had good enough players to do it and he knew that everyone else was knackered and his players had been playing together quite a long time, so he got away with it. But Ole's team and Ole, who's the manager, are not good enough to keep making those changes. Now, you've bought Jadon Sancho. You want him to settle in, play him in the games. And you saw, actually, against Everton, I thought one of the bright spots was Sancho, who was much better. He needs to play the next game and the next game and the next game so he understands what runs Ronaldo's going to make. He wants the ball not in front of him. He wants the ball to his feet. And the other players need to learn that. And the way that you'll build that is by playing the same players in most of the games, changing one or two if you have to. And then your bench players, they're getting half an hour. They're getting 20 minutes. And that's the way that you integrate them. And that's the way that it all works.
The Fred McTominay partnership, though, is the one that started against Villa in the league and started against West Ham in the league. And, you know, it seems like that's his first choice, too. And the issue seems to be that they're not quite at the level of the other three contenders for the Premier League title race at the moment. And look, here's the thing. That's not new news, right? Like,
no, I agree. The thing, United were always, but there are teams, you can win the league if you've got a good defence and a good attack. Like, that can be enough. But at the moment, the defence isn't good enough, or it's not getting protected enough. Like, they need to sort out what it means to stop the counter. And then that would make things a lot better. And I agree that Fred and McTominay aren't good enough. Like, I'd like an upgrade on both of them if I could have one. But in the meantime, they're probably the best that United have got. So what United need to do is, and what the players need to do as well, because the players need to get together. And you can see that Bruno basically said it after the game, that it's not about anyone outside, it's about the players. We need to make sure that we don't get countered on. You saw Ronaldo after Everton's goal indicating that Fred should have gone through Damari Gray. Luke Shaw ran to the ball also. Instead of, he'd stayed with Damari Gray, probably wouldn't have been a goal either. So the players also need to take some responsibility and say, well, if the management isn't going to sort this out, then we need to sort it out. How are we going to defend this? And because the way that United is conceding goals and the way that they're conceding chances are quite similar. They're throwing men forward and they're getting countered on. Stopping that shouldn't be too difficult. And even though you've got those two midfield players, Fred and McTominay, who you know aren't at the standard that you would like, they're good enough to stop three or four members of the opposition charging through the middle of the pitch with a little bit more organisation and a little bit more communication. So if they're able to do that, then United haven't kept a clean sheet in a long time. Is it 8 or 9 games or something? And if they're able to do that, then you start to have a defence that will start to keep clean sheets, because you're taking away the principal way that you're conceding goals. And that will also enable you to score goals more freely. I mean, Rashford's going to come back as well, and he is a reliable goal scorer that United have. The interplay between the players isn't enough, and that's why I keep hammering this keep picking the same players point, because that is the way you're going to make that happen. And the team are good enough to score a couple of goals in most games and to concede 0 or 1 goals in one goal in most games when they play at their top level. It's a matter of playing at their top level, and that is something that they're capable of, because we've seen it. And so much as Fred and McTominay aren't of the standard that you would want, I wouldn't blame what I saw the other day on Fred and McTominay particularly. I'd blame it on a lack of, like, the movement wasn't good enough from the front players, and they weren't good enough as a team at working out how to stop the counter. And that's on the management, but it's also on the players, and it shouldn't take that much sorting, really.
You mentioned earlier on, Daniel, that Mo Salah is like a cheat code for Liverpool, and that when Manchester United have their cheat code, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer doesn't get enough credit. Why didn't he start his cheat code on Saturday? And if it's because he's 36 years of age, then why does he have a 36-year-old as the person that Manchester United fans have their hopes pinned upon? And their issue is having players in and out of the starting 11.
I guess Ronaldo looked tired against Villarreal, and you've got options. I didn't think Ronaldo would play that game, actually. I mean, Everton at home is a difficult game, and so it was a kind of annoying to waste Ronaldo for that game. But to rest Ronaldo for that game, but Cavani needed to play. I thought that was an okay change, but I wouldn't have played. I know Martial scored, but I wouldn't have played Martial, because that's another change to your front three. I don't think it's a problem to, when you've got good players, to rotate them, but five or one time is too many. And I think that Ronaldo, as you say, is 36, and he will play most of the games, but you have to pick the ones he doesn't play. I mean, I was sort of surprised that the one he didn't play was a game before the international break when. Portugal have quite easy games coming up. Shouldn't have to do too much running in those. But we don't know how fit the players are. We don't know. I mean, I don't know enough about sports science or about fitness to say, well, that was definitely a bad move to rest Ronaldo then. I felt like it was a bad move not starting Sancho in that game. And I still can't understand. I mean, I feel like Sancho was bought to play on the right, because Rashford's going to be back soon and play on the left, so he should have some games there. But I understand why Ronaldo didn't play in that one, and I don't think it's a problem to rest him in some of the games when you've got the options that United have. It just felt like... Because, you know, remember that United in the first half hour of that game were good. They then sort of slowed down afterwards. It was that period afterwards. If United had scored in the first half an hour and they had two brilliant chances to score, then they probably would have won by a couple of goals. But what happened was the finishing wasn't good enough, and they allowed Everton to kind of feel their way into the game and start to get confident about their own game. And they've got players who are good enough to hurt you, as we saw. But no, I didn't think that changing Ronaldo was the problem. I did think that changing five players was a big problem, though.
Daniel, who was man of the match in the Liverpool City game?
Salah.
Fair enough. You wouldn't have said that.
Yeah, I mean,
you weren't giving out two.
Pardon?
You weren't giving out two awards.
No. I mean, I think Foden's amazing, but it felt like the biggest factor in that second half was Salah. Foden was great in the first half, but when the game really got going in the second half, if Foden had scored in the first half, different matter. But when the game got going in the second half, Salah was the key figure, I thought.
Good stuff, Daniel. Great. Thanks for joining us this morning. Cheers.
No worries. See you again. Have a good day, everyone.
Daniel Harris giving us his thoughts there. Philip Nolan says, Ole's stubborn reliance on McFred will be his undoing. He's adamant they're the right midfield going forward. Only if they're in danger of missing top four will he be sacked. The Glazers don't care about titles.
Hang on. It's a kind of Arsenal end of Wenger era view that the owners will take. Like, why would they sack him right now?
Well, I think one thing, which there's a new chief executive who obviously has been part of the club for years and years. He's been on the commercial side. But do you want to come in and one of the first things you do, sack a club legend, like in the first 6 months of being in charge?
Exactly.
I'm not sure. If United had spent the $73 million they used on the unnecessary signing of Sancho on a world-class central defensive midfielder, says Adam, they could have challenged City, Chelsea and Liverpool properly. I mean,
it's interesting how we've already got to that stage of could have with regards to Manchester United. Like, mathematically, they are absolutely they've made a brilliant start, and if they'd beaten Everton, they would have been top of the league going into this international break. But it's interesting how the tone has already got to their recruitment wasn't good enough to challenge for the title.
WOD says, it's not just about the players being not so familiar with each other, it's about having a game plan, a system. That's where the understanding comes from, by being coached. Philip says, I agree in the Sancho fee, but it just proves he doesn't think he needs to buy a central defensive midfield. I don't think it proves that at all. I think it's like, this isn't Wenger not buying a goalkeeper for all those years when they had goalkeepers who were throwing the ball in. This is different. This is they couldn't find the right player, right?
It definitely seems that way because they had the cash to throw at Jadon Sancho.